Dr. Greenspan, thank you so much for joining us today on Body Language on Radio MD.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are the co-author with your colleague, psychologist Dr. Juliana Deardorff, PhD, of the book The New Puberty, How to Navigate Early Development in Today's Girls, or What Happens When a Girl Has the Brain of an 8-Year-Old and the Body of a 13-Year-Old. Tell me, Doctor, why did this book need to be written?
Well, there has become an overwhelming body of literature showing that girls are showing the first signs of puberty, which are breast development and pubic hair, at much younger...
Let's back up for just a second. Of course, okay. I interrupted you. Tell me, Doctor, what is the difference between the onset of puberty and menarche, a girl's first menstrual period?
Yes, a lot of people think that they are one and the same, but in fact, hormonally and developmentally, the first period, menarche, is a very late event in the process. And the process starts at least 2 to 3 years earlier in typically developing girls, with the first sign of puberty being breast development and pubic hair.
And that occurs, I believe, at different times in women's lives, depending on their ethnicity. Is that correct?
Well, it's interesting. There's more and more research that's been looking at how old girls are when they start with, say, breast development. And we used to say that it had to be at least after age 8, and that before age 8 was considered abnormal.
Ah.
And our research suggests that at age 7, 15% of girls have breast development. And by age 8, which was considered the normal cutoff for having any, 27% of girls have breast development. For pubic hair, the numbers are at age 7, now 10% of girls have pubic hair, 20% overall at age 8. But when we break it down by ethnicity, we find that African-American girls and Hispanic girls are starting earlier than the white and the Asian girls.
It's interesting that there is a statistical parallel, and this is anecdotal on my part, between the numbers you just gave and the numbers that relate to teenage pregnancy. For example, 75% of black children are born to unmarried black women. 50% of children are born to unmarried Latina women, and 25% of white children are born to unmarried Anglo women. Is that a fair comparison or analogy? And if so, what is the relationship to puberty?
I don't think that's a fair comparison directly to pregnancy of people who aren't married, because that's a very complex...
Yes, social issue, economic issue. Right?
...topic with many other things. I don't think that's relevant.
I gave a copy of The New Puberty to a neighbor who is a single parent, a man, a great guy, who for some reason thinks I know something about medicine because I'm on the air talking about it. His daughter is 8 years old, and when he looked at the cover, he cried. He cried and said, oh, now it's all about bras, pads, menstruation, boys, and sex, and more sex. But he read the book and felt very empowered, but he was still confused, and I think this is a great promo for the book, as to how he would sit down and have the talk, which you don't recommend. You recommend starting the conversation with the daughter early and often. And your book has proved to be invaluable in his hands. He's taking your advice to the letter.
Well, that's great. I'm so glad we were able to help him, because that's why Julie and I wrote the book. We actually have really outlined steps to help parents who feel uncomfortable start having those conversations. And we really do think it shouldn't be one talk where you talk about puberty and sex and pregnancy all at once, because that's not developmentally appropriate. If you have a 7-year-old with breast development or body odor, what they need to hear about is what's going on for them right now. And the interesting thing is that kids don't connect puberty to sex or pregnancy the way that adults do. So kids think about what's happening with their bodies now. So you can have a discussion about puberty without having to bring up a lot of things that the child and the parent may not be ready for.
Well, I suggested to my neighbor, in addition to reading the book, that if he was uncomfortable or confused or bewildered by the process of trying to explain puberty and other issues to his daughter, that he contact his HMO and retain an OBGYN or a pediatric endocrinologist to sort of mediate the conversation, which is exactly what he did. In fact, I bought him another copy of the book. I think I've already bought four copies of this book.
Thank you.
And he gave a copy of The New Puberty to the physician who hadn't read it, and she was thrilled by the book. So essentially, he kind of sat back and watched this dialogue go on between his daughter and the female physician. He said he was just constantly shaking his head. He said, I had no idea. Oh my goodness, they're talking about all this stuff. I had no idea. It was all very mysterious. Would you recommend retaining a physician as a guide, as a mediator, as a counselor to facilitate a conversation like this?
I think a general pediatrician or a general family practice doctor is very well skilled at doing this. I don't think you need to necessarily leap to doing it with a specialist like myself, because pediatricians and general physicians are dealing with kids' puberty every single day when they see children. I do think a trip to the pediatrician is a wonderful place to start the conversation, especially if parents are worried that their children are going through too early. That pediatrician can reassure the parent or the caregiver and then open up the lines of communication with the child. And as you said, model it. I think it's great that your neighbor was able to find an OBGYN that was comfortable. I think a lot of OBGYNs aren't necessarily as skilled with talking to 7-year-olds or 8-year-olds. If they are, that's wonderful.
Yes.
The pediatricians are trained in that from the first day of their training. And I think that having this discussion at the pediatrician's office is a really great idea.
Well, please accept my apologies. I forgot my basic training from the American Academy of Pediatrics, who say children are not just small adults. We have to remember that.
Well, I think this is a perfect example of that with the whole puberty thing. Exactly.
We'll all raise our right hands and repeat after me. Children are not just small adults. The other issue is something that relates to a survey that I read years ago, and I can't find the source. It was called the Japanese War Bride Study, which discovered that the breast cancer rates among Japanese women who moved to the United States with their husbands was extraordinarily low, far lower than the native-born population. But after a generation, those rates increased to equal the rates of native-born women.
That's a very famous study.
You're familiar with that. Now, you talk in the book about soy, which is an integral part of the Asian diet. What is going on here, and why do you discuss soy?
Soy is it's a very controversial subject, and there's not enough research on it. But our research and the research of others suggests that, starting with the study that you have described, and there's other studies that show that it's not that women in Asia have a lower risk of breast cancer, and when they move here with no changes in genetics, children who are fully of the same ancestry have a higher rate of breast cancer here. And one of the big differences is a lower rate of tofu or soy intake in America. And our research and the research of some others suggests that whole tofu, edamame, or other soy foods may be protective against a lot of different health problems. We're not talking about processed soy. So I'm not talking about soy protein isolate or fake meats. I'm talking about unprocessed, healthy soy milk, edamame, and tofu. The data suggests that that may be protective against early puberty. It's certainly probably a healthier thing to eat than meat every day. And so we do recommend some soy intake for girls in a moderate amount.
Dr. Greenspan, Dr. Lois Greenspan, MD, pediatric endocrinologist, one of my favorite folks. How can people learn more about your work and that of Dr. Juliana Dierdorf, your co-author, PhD, and the book, The New Puberty? Where can folks tune in? Perhaps a URL.
Yes, so we have thenewpuberty.com, and we are also on Facebook as The New Puberty, and people are welcome to look there for more resources as well as other interviews that we've done as well.
And puberty is spelled P-U-B-E-R-T-Y.